Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in once again to Brio TV, the podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by Hollywood Suite, Jan on CTV, and Super Channel. Express yourself. Express yourself. Well, welcome again, everyone, to another episode of Brio TV, the podcast. Glad to have you with us. Good of you to join us. And I think you're in for a treat today. This next gentleman, I've interviewed many times, have had the pleasure of talking to him really since his career began, pretty much. I was working early days at TV Guide and then at the Toronto Sun. But obviously, this was a show that he was the host of that I would write about every year for any publication. It's Hockey Night in Canada, of course. And our guest today is the anchor, host, the man at the center of that show, Mr. Ron McLean. Ron, thank you very much for joining me today.
Total pleasure, Bill.
It's always been fun crossing paths, and now, of course, we get to talk to you about Battle of the Blades, which we've talked to before, so it's I'm really happy that that show's back on the ice and we can get into that. But first of all, Ron, tell me, why are you talking to me today?
Well, you know, Bill, I have fond memories of two things. Number one, I kind of would Google your name and go to your websites and find out what the heck was happening in the TV industry, because I was kind of living in the dark. I'm a beer league hockey player, and I don't focus too much on pop culture. In fact, when I started doing Blades, and Trevor Hammond, a writer-producer, said, Ron, when we get to this moment in revealing the votes, do a Seacrest. And I just assumed he meant having the water, the ocean, and the wave, and the crescendo. I had no idea who Ryan Seacrest was. But wow. So you were my conduit to especially Canadian television and ratings and some of the things that naturally I'd find interesting. But more than that, honestly, my favorite moment between us was after Rogers had earned the rights to the NHL. Yep. And George Strombolopoulos was put in as host of Hockey Night in Canada. And I was sort of shuffled over to the fourth line, albeit still doing the Coach's Corner with Don Cherry. So having a role on Saturday nights, but was part of a new show they created called Rogers Hometown Hockey. And you pulled me aside. I don't know if you saw me as crestfallen, but you just pulled me aside and said, you know, Ron, this could be the best opportunity in all of this that you have. I really believe that this is a great possibility for you, and you could come out smelling like a rose. So I hope you know that you said that to me, and the show survived. It was a fledgling show, Rogers Hometown Hockey, but 6 years later we're still going, although obviously with COVID-19 it'll be in a new format. It'll be kind of a mystery how we do it for year seven, but I always was grateful for your kindness that day.
Well, Ron, that's a lovely memory. Thank you for sharing that. I do recall that. It was a strange day, and we were in a dark upper soundstage, I think, probably up at CBC when that announcement was made. And I just recall it was, I was a bit, what's the word, just flummoxed or something at the how some of the announcements were being made. It didn't seem clear to me that some of the folks in charge had done a lot of research that I had done over the years in following TV, and it was perplexing. But I did think I still feel that way, that you are the perfect guy to carry that torch and open that door. But all these communities across Canada, you certainly convey your enthusiasm for the game and just for Canadian cities and towns and people in rinks. And I just thought, wow, this could be really something to watch. And it always has been. So congrats for taking that opportunity and running with it. And also for being once again, and for the last few years, the host and anchor of Hockey Night in Canada.
Well, here's a confession, too. That day that they held the press conference, I had a crushing hangover. And this kind of ties into my love of grassroots hockey and folks from around the country. But I was with the PEI Islanders, my dear friend Forbes Kennedy's boys, Gary and Mike, and the Berts, Trevor, and Trent. These are all guys connected to the Charlottetown Islanders and the National Hockey League. And we were all at the Royal York Hotel having a wonderful night partying. When the call came, hey, it's leaking. What's happening at Hockey Night in Canada? The word's getting out, so we're calling a rush press conference, and George will be announced, and everything else will be announced. And so I was in a really funny frame of mind that day. You could have thrown anything my way. I already knew what was coming down the pike.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to relive the comfort of being with the PEI crew that Sunday night and discussing what was about to take place over a number of beers. Mm. Now, listen, Bill, this is the most unusual thing. The COVID-19 testers have just arrived. Are we in a position that we can pause and I can get tested here?
Yes, certainly, Ron.
You've never had that happen in your podcast.
No, listen, by all means, I don't want to get COVID catching it through you in a virtual way. No, of course, let's push pause on this. Phil, is this something we can do easily?
Yeah.
Okay, while Ron's out getting a test, we're going to take a little break and come back. We're going to hear from a sponsor, then we'll come back and ask Ron, how did that go? You know, this has been a hard year for film festival fans. Most festivals in 2020 have been shut down due to the coronavirus outbreak, leaving cinemas in the dark and Canadian filmmakers without a place to showcase their latest efforts. Well, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than gargling with hydrochloroquine, comes Super Channel to the rescue. Yes, Super Channel, the specialty pay TV service, it's come along with a great idea, and that's to show virtual film festivals, and they partnered with the Edmonton International Film Fest, and they showed shorts and features on there. And coming up later this month, starting October 28th, they're doing another festival. They're partnering with the Blood in the Snow Film Festival. So just in time for Halloween, kids, some scary feature films, some creepy stuff, some good old-fashioned Halloween gore. That's coming at you courtesy of Super Channel. Super Channel, it's available through your cable company or through Amazon Prime.
That was, I didn't sneeze. Have you had one?
I have had one, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the biggest challenge, is to not sneeze.
Now, did you get the, when I had it, it was like a Q-tip with a long wooden stick. That's and right. I know my son's had the one with the more flexible thread kind of stick.
That's what I had, the thread version. So it does, it doesn't apply a particular pressure to the side of the membranes of the nose, but it still tickles. That's what I find.
No kidding. And Ron, how often do you have to get tested while you're in production on Battle of the Blades?
We are 48 hours out and 24 hours and day of. So there's three tests. Yeah. Always 48 hours before any form of contact. And honestly, this whole show this year is like a blind date because we are in such bubbles. The skating teams themselves, figure skater, hockey player, and coach and choreographer, those four-person units have never met the other skaters. So that's really different. And Keisha Shante, the co-host, our host, I've yet to meet her in person. So that's a really strange, we're so used to sitting around having coffee and yakking. But that's the price, and it's one we're happy to pay.
I had the pleasure to interview Keisha a few weeks ago. She was a guest on Jan, the new CTV sitcom, and she was a delight. I really enjoyed speaking with her. I live in Brampton, which is a place where she hung out and went to high school for a while. So you must be enjoying that. I found her really pleasant and full of fun.
She reminds me of, I had an experience in the spring, Bill, when we were doing an online series called In Conversation. So for approximately 3 months, three times a week, I would interview pairings. Always we would try to have a man and a woman and talk sometimes about sport, but often about ethics and social injustice, etc. Anyway, I didn't know John Sally. Do you know who he is? He's an NBA four-time champion. And this was when Michael Jordan's dance documentary was out.
Right.
So John Sally was like in the news, and I should know him, but I don't. I'm a hockey guy. As I told you, I live in my own little bubble. So I started to find out about John prior to the interview, and I was just astounded at the things he had done. And same with Keisha, to get to know a little bit of her own history. She's an only child, and I was an only child. So there's
me too, Ron.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. So you're always intrigued by someone who had that experience. And she's you know her story well. I mean, she obviously moved from Ottawa over to Brampton, and I actually, through that In Conversation series, got to study a lot about hip-hop music. I honestly feel, Bill, and maybe you do too, I don't know, but I feel like someone who's missed the British invasion, in the sense that I don't really have the hip-hop music scene in
that's
my
a, arsenal. That's a really apt way to put it, one that I relate to completely. So, yeah,
crazy. So I watched Shad's series, Hip Hop Evolution, and in it, Tupac Shakur, who is her idol. I mean, I know she cites Drake, and musically she would certainly list Alicia Keys and Beyonce and the OJs and Stevie Wonder and a lot of influences. But her true, I think, you know, star, North Star, would be Tupac Shakur, who died in a crazy shooting incident in 1996, and shares the same birth date as Keisha. But his story, I'm bogging you down here, but his story and the whole hip hop music story, if there's been a blessing of COVID-19, it's for me to understand and get to know that story. And now vicariously through understanding a little bit of the history of hip hop, to start to love the music.
Yeah. Well, Ron, what would your hip hop name be if you were, you know,
Mac Daddy. Mac Daddy.
Mac Daddy.
that's a stolen from the on the bench comedians. Yeah, gave me that one. Mine
was Big Mac Daddy.
Well, there you go. That works.
Yeah. So it's more about burgers, but anyway. Now, you know, so you're shooting Battle of the Blades, and from what I understand, and explain this to me, you started production on season 6. And then it was halted because there was an incident with COVID. Could you just explain what happened in that process?
Right. One of the skaters tested positive, I would say, a fortnight ago. And when I say that, that's just ahead of the October 22nd premiere. As you suggest, we were supposed to debut on the 15th of October, but we needed the two-week quarantine period, which took us past that date. Right. That person, you know, the afflicted had to go into quarantine, obviously had to completely recover, had to be completely cleared in order to return to their competition bubble, which, as I mentioned, is a four-person unit. I have no idea who it was. We did contract tracing because there was two people on the crew that had connection to me. Anthony Stewart was with me on Hockey Night in Canada. Mm-hmm. Chris Versteeg had been with us on Sportsnet for the signing season show. And my wife, Carrie, plays hockey and was kind of indirectly connected to Jennifer Botterill. That's probably public information, but I kind of knew from contract tracing that it wasn't those three. Right. After that, I don't know. But anyway, it could have been a choreographer, coach, one of the skaters in those four-person units. Mm. And that meant everything went on pause. And it also, I think, made our protocols all the more stringent. We have to really, really isolate and be careful of any contact. And the testing, you know, was always meant to happen as it is. Mm-hmm. But there will be, you know, we're doing everything to make sure that everyone's safe.
And these are, the show is produced, I presume, in Toronto on a rink somewhere in the GTA, right?
Yes, it is. It's in Brampton. I don't think that's a secret, but it's at the CAA Center in Brampton. So, good to know. We'll be right next door to you.
Yeah, no kidding. I've had the pleasure to attend the tapings back when the first three or four seasons, when you were first launched the series. And, you know, I think one year was at Maple Leaf Garden still, which is the Ryerson Rink, and then the MasterCard Center. And part of that experience was, you know, there were spectators, and it was a you know, it looked like a big live variety show with an ice surface. What's it been like doing the show this way, where you're, as you're explaining, in isolated bubbles and without an audience?
Well, as we talk, I have yet to experience what is going to be a virtual audience. So there are 25 massive monitors around the arena. Mm-hmm. And with that, we will pipe in the parents of the skaters, family acquaintances or friends or teammates from their either hockey or figure skating backgrounds. We'll also have a virtual audience so people can email to BOTBaudience@insighttv.com and apply, if that's the word, to be part of our audience. But we've yet to try it. We've yet to actually, and that's where Keisha, that's going to be, she's in ringleading that little circus we have. And the only thing I can liken it to is during our Stanley Cup playoff coverage, we began to track the audio of the virtual crowds that they had for the NHL games. And that worked really well. It actually gave the similar energy to having a spectator experience. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all works out. But for the time being, I don't know. And the only other thing I would say, Bill, is that I don't know that the live audience really factored in dramatically to the skates as they were happening through the first five seasons, because I got to experience the dress rehearsal at 3 p.m. And dress and the actual live show, honestly, were very similar in temperament, very similar in execution. You could feel the pressure even in the dress rehearsal as the, I mean, this is such a risky proposition.
Right.
You know, it really is for any skater to be lifted 10, 12 feet in the air and on that thin blade of steel. There's no fooling around with or without an audience. So I think the skaters are, and one of the things we've seen with all the live sports that was taking place without crowds is that the actual execution, the fundamental pressures, they were the same. The Stanley Cup playoffs with no crowds felt identical to the Stanley Cup playoffs with 20,000 in the arena. So
wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, to me, and watching hockey and watching all the sports, the football, the one that actually looks the goofiest to me is baseball, because there's cardboard people behind the batters. That looks a little cheesy. I don't know. But when you're just watching the game and the action and you're listening to this, it's almost like sitcoms where we've been conditioned to laugh because of a laugh track. There's now a sports track that is a roar of people that I guess is monitored and manipulated to swing with the action. And it seems like they're getting better and better at it. It really seems to fit.
Well, it coincides with the whole gaming experience. The idea of EA Sports, NHL gaming, that's how they recreate that whole emotion and illusion. So they had a lot of experience, people they could tap into their, ways of doing things that really sweetened the audio experience. And that just goes to prove how much audio is an instrument of the visual medium.
Yeah, no kidding. When you guys would do those rehearsals, as you said, for Blades, did they shoot them as well so they could use something there if something didn't work?
So the 3 o'clock dress rehearsal is taped in its entirety, and we've always had that standby situation where if a skating accident happens during the live broadcast, well then we at some point, while paramedics and medical professionals take care of the injured. We at some point, once we know they're safe and on their way to hospital, we have to start carrying on with the routine. But we may take their taped performance and run it for the sake of the judging.
Of course, yeah. Now, Ron, it seems to me when the Battle of the Blades first began, and we're talking now over 10 years, aren't we? It's 2009, I think.
Correct, season. I was in my 40s. now I'm 60, so gosh.
Right, I don't know. Yeah, me too. I'm a bit older, so I was already in my 50s in 2009. But It seemed at that point to be a lot about, and in terms of fan interest, ex-NHLers who would be part of this Dancing with the Stars kind of event, but on skates, and that it was fun to see enforcers like Ty Domi or George Laroque, people like that, suddenly doing ice skating, Olympic-style figure skating. But that's not what's going on now, is it, Ron? It's less, it seems to me, about the NHLers and more about female hockey players and international athletes, right?
You couldn't agree more. The year that we started, 2009, I give full marks to Ty Domi. Without Ty Domi, we don't have Battle of the Blades. Huh. Kevin Albrecht used his connection to get Ty. Sandra Bezic used hers to get Kurt Browning. And those were our two superstars. That gave us the marquee right off the bat. And then we were blessed to have the late Bob Probert on that cast as well. Yeah. So to be able to put, Probert versus Domi figure skating, I mean, that was mixed martial arts. I'm not a fan of mixed martial arts, but their marketing, you can't deny.
Yep.
Same with wrestling, you can't deny. And it gave us that. It gave us an incredible opportunity. And we actually eliminated Bob Probert on show
right
one.
Away. Right away.
Out of our minds. I don't care if we have to fix it. We can't lose Probert yet.
Right.
But anyway, we did. And I guess that just proves we're legitimate. And then as you suggest, over the years, we didn't get maybe some of the star power, but by then the actual storytelling and the ability to work with the choreography and I'll never forget Scott Thornton and Amanda Ivora won one season, and they were doing triple throws that were the equal of Olympians.
Yeah, no, it's stunning.
Right. So that, and I often think of some of my favorite moments, Bill, were Christopher Dean. iconic figure skater, Christopher Dean of Torvill and Dean. He was a judge one night for us, and same with Taller Cranston and Katarina Witt. And I remember them sitting in their judges' dais chairs looking at this, you know, albeit a bit of tomfoolery by their standards. But you could see the respect. You could see them actually lean in their seats forward to appreciate, you know, my God, this is a hockey player, Valerie Bure, with a Katarina Gordieva. I can't believe what I'm seeing here.
It was astounding.
That's what it's become.
Yeah, be still my heart, Katarina Witt. My goodness.
Oh my gosh, she was so funny. Yeah, she was a judge on our Halloween show and stole the show, of course.
No kidding. She would steal every show she was in figure skating. Talk a bit about Bob Probert. My God, Ron. I mean, there's a guy who obviously was the heavyweight champion of the NHL, but he had hands. He had all this other scoring talent. I got to meet him. There was a group of TV producers who had a show, Rent-A-Goalie, was on 15 years ago, and they did a charity skate, and I got invited to it, and they had Probert there, and my God, this guy was at this rink. We were out in Deer Lake in Newfoundland, and he let kids shave his head. It was just before Halloween, and to raise money, like he literally, in between shifts, you could shave a strip off of Bob Probert's head, and if you paid $20, it went to this charity. And I thought, in what sport, in what possible universe would a professional athlete, like an NBA player or a baseball player, let this happen just so some kids would get some money for some rink? And I just, the guy could not have been more humble and sweet, this giant of a man. So heartbreaking, really, that we lost him so young, isn't it?
Well, we had Wade Bielak as well that we lost one season. And, you know, Bob and Wade, similar temperaments, just the kindest human beings you've ever met. And, you know, I think, Bill, that's the great quality of sport that you're seeing there. And for sure, when I was listening the other day, Elias Baldy will be a judge this year. He was kind of the show stealer last year, coming in and doing his tricks and doing some solo performances within the show. And he's a great Canadian figure skater. Elias and Dylan Moskovich, another fine Canadian pair skater, did a podcast recently, and I just listened to them talk about heart and about vulnerability and all that. I think all of these athletes grew up admiring somebody, and I think that's why Probert would understand what he had become for those children in Deer Lake. That's the home of Darren Langdon, right, who's a great NHL tough. Langdon, yeah, he's got Langer's. And I always remember I went to Langer's bar, and then we did Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada. It was based in Stephenville, Newfoundland, so just down the west coast of Newfoundland. And I interviewed Darren and Michael Ryder of the Montreal Canadiens at the time. And Darren says to Michael, Ron McLean was in my bar. And Michael Ryder says, oh, what did they think of him? And Darren Langdon says, well, the waitress wasn't too impressed. He only had one beer and he left a lousy tip. Which, back to the earlier story I told you, obviously wouldn't be true. I wouldn't have just one beer.
No, of course not.
And I don't have a lousy tip.
Right. You know, my memory is coming out of there at like 3 a.m. with all these guys, young guys from Canada, you know, that had been in this TV show and the players and stuff. And we're walking along out of Langer's, and there's this couple, there's two men holding each other up, walking the other way, an older guy and another fellow, and they come up parallel to me, and they looked up at me and goes, well, there's a great big smiley face. I thought, that's the most friendly thing anyone's ever said to me, drunk or sober. It was just a special kind of folk there. Ron, we're going to take a short break just to have a word from our sponsors. And when we get back, I want to ask a bit about more about Battle of the Blades, but also about your experience this past season on Hockey Night in Canada, because you've been in a bubble on two big shows. So if you don't mind, we'll get into that in just a moment.
Great.
Now, if you watch TV like me, you've probably caught the second season of Jan. This is the brilliant CTV comedy starring Jan Arden. Jan Arden, singer-songwriter, you've heard her, you've known her, but last season when she premiered with this show, I was just blown away that here she was doing shtick, doing slapstick
with some of the best performers on television, and then very serious moments. You know, the show deals with a lot of things, and it was just quite an achievement for Jan Arden. So take it in, check it out. Jan Arden, she's back on Jan, airing at Mondays at 8 p.m. on CTV and everywhere CTV content can be found.
Well, here we are in the month of October, but you know, at Hollywood Suite, they call it Shocktober. Yes, that's right. Thrills and chills all month long. They've got Shocktober classics. You can find your favorite horror movies all in one place, Hollywood Suite. You can see films like Night of the Living Dead, The Shining. The Shining. I still sleep with a crucifix every night. Zombieland is another one. Alien. Wow, you get to see Sigourney Weaver in her underwear. Seven. That's a scary film. Silence of the Lambs. They've got every single thing you can think of. Check it out all month, Shocktober, on Hollywood Suite, and just $5 a month. See, that's not scary at all. We're back with my special guest, 10-time Gemini Award winner. Is that right, Ron? Have we got it? 10 of them?
Yes, but those are the good old days. They call it the Canadian Screen Awards now, and I think I'm in a rut.
Well, it's Ron McLean, obviously. And yeah, I mean, to me, I collect 16-millimeter film. When I hear about Screen Awards, I'm thinking, is it a daylight or a – like it's – anyway, it's an obscure reference to pulling down screens, so who knows about that. But do you have a special – do you display your trophies from your Gemini wins? Do you have a shelf at home?
I want to be careful not to be self-aggrandizing, but I only have one. I gave the other nine away. So I like to give them to, like, Dan Snyder. The late Dan Snyder was a hockey player who died in a car accident in Atlanta. So I took one of the Geminis out to Mr. Snyder, Graham, because I knew he was heartbroken. And it was just like an award, you know, that he could win, because Danny could no longer win awards. And he was a great little hockey player. So I tried to do nice things like that with those awards. And they're big, you know, they're actually beautiful. The Gemini Canadian Screen Awards, I'm not such a fan of the actual trophy.
Right.
But as
I said, it looks like an ice scraper. Let's be frank.
Yeah. I'm glad James Duthie wins them now. I wouldn't want them.
Right. Well, we'll just see if he comes on the podcast. But it's good to be recognized, and it's quite an accomplishment to have 10 of anything. And talking about Hockey Night in Canada, we talked about Battle of the Blades, which is ongoing now, and it premieres October 22nd, Ron. Is that a Thursday night, I think?
It is, and I'm just sick that it's also the night of the presidential debate, and I don't know how you don't watch that circus. I mean, that has become the reality show, hasn't it? So, but anyway, if you're tired of one guy bullying and there's mute buttons. They have to have mute buttons for the two guests.
Right.
So that means you should, you know, go to the mute button on that and come and enjoy the proper reality show.
It's a battle of the fades, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's my – they have more blades than we do. That's the problem.
but yeah, the show is returning. And how many episodes are we going to see this season?
It's six. So we will carry on. You know, everybody had kind of shut down their life to be part of our series, and obviously we couldn't extend it into December. So we will run through late November. The 26th is the finale. But yeah, so October 22nd, 2-hour premiere. And honestly, Bill, you know, of course I chill for the show, but we have such a cast. You mentioned a little bit ago, we have three female superstar hockey players that are women. Mm-hmm. I guess a female would be a woman. But that's for me, it allows us to have Eric Radford and Andrew Poget and Asher Hill, you know, great male skaters, mm-hmm. as well as great female figure skaters. So it's going to be a fantastic grouping this year.
Christopher Stieg, you mentioned too.
So Christopher Stieg, yeah, the men, I mean, all there's two-time Stanley Cup champions in Versteeg and in Brian Bickell, both of whom played really key roles for the Blackhawks in their wins. We also have Akeem Alou is of course in the, you know, middle of he's with the Hockey Diversity Alliance and in the middle of a moment in history, not just at the minute moment of a show. So he's a part of our show. And Anthony Stewart, I mentioned from Hockey Night in Canada, has got a great partner in Violeta Fanasieva, who she's just a joy to have on our telecast yet again. So it's a really great cast.
My memory, I was fortunate one year, Ron, the folks at CBC invited me down to the rink, MasterCard Center, and to do a little skating with one of the pairs. and Brian Berard, I believe, and his partner
Marie France.
My goodness, yeah, they're both so talented. But you know, I had some insight into this, and my God, it's so hard, especially if you're an NHL player and you've played 12, 15 years. Your knees are shot at the end of that, and to be able to land in figure skating, I don't know how some of them did it. Like, it's not easy, is it?
Well, and the other thing is shoulders and rotator cuffs. Yeah. In fact, after season one, you remember, well, you might remember, we had Ron Duguay, and we had a lot of guys who were getting up there, and still young, but they were in their 40s or maybe even 50. And that we found was really a challenge to go 7 weeks lifting. At that age.
So we
tried to find in our demographics a younger hockey player. But some of them, they're like Chris Chelios played to eternity, Zdeno Chara. So it really depends on the player. But that, as you mentioned, their knees are pretty banged up, and so are their shoulders. When Eric Lindros got hit hard years ago by a player named Scott Stevens, everybody thought it was a concussion that kind of ended his career early. But truth be told, his shoulder was worse than the concussion.
Wow,
he really had every ligament, every part of his shoulder blown to pieces.
It's rough, I can imagine. I always remember Jim Ralph's joke about Ron Duguay, and it's that when Duguay first came into the NHL, I think he broke in with the Rangers, I'm not sure, but he had a everybody thinks of Ron Duguay with the flowing hair and looking at the crowd and the ladies' man. But his first season, he was a pretty tough character, He put six people in the hospital, five of them maternity.
Yes, right. he was the only guy, I think, Bill, that brought his own outfits. A lot of the shirts that Ron Duguay wore, even at, I think he was 50 when he competed on Blades in 2009.
Right.
We'd have to check that. But yeah, he still was able to use his own wardrobe. So the Flash still got it.
He didn't have to be talked into the V-neck shirt with the medallion for the figure skating. Just part of his wardrobe. So Hockey Night in Canada finally starts up. We're holding our breath and weeks, and the NHL resumes. What was that like for you? I guess you were in a bubble like everyone else, or were you back? Were you in a studio? How did you manage to circumnavigate this process?
We hold up because there were two bubbles, as you suggest, for the hockey games, Toronto and Edmonton, but we actually anchored the telecast from the CBC building on the 10th floor, and we had some obviously protocols for COVID-19, and we socially distanced. I had just one colleague on the desk at any given time. Usually it was Kevin Bieksa, former Vancouver Canuck, and it was strange because Anthony Stewart would be off in another part of the massive 10th floor studio, and then Elliot Friedman and Kelly Rudy would be nowhere in our eyesight. They would be in another room, and David Amber and Brian Burke were upstairs in another section.
Wow.
So everybody, you'd hear a voice out of the, out of the depths and wonder, what was that, Elliot? But other than that, I liked the format. We kind of simplified and went to a 4 or 5 box screen where, everybody was just looking down the barrel of the camera and speaking to the viewer. And I think it minimized, and I don't want to offend directors and producers out there, but we got away from, jib operation and all these different things that supposed to make the show, have pace and energy and sexy. And we just spoke to the viewer and relied on the content. And we had some very good content because of that.
Ron, you should just keep doing it. I think it worked really well. I thought those panels, the intermission segments, were brisk and entertaining. And, Bieksa, pretty good debut. I thought he did a great job.
He's incredible. I think it was show two. He introduced the idea that if a right-hand shot passes the puck to a right-hand shooter, the spin on the puck, I don't know if it was centrifugal or centrifugal, but he said that particular spin is preferable to having a left-handed passer throw the puck to a right-hand shooter. And he illustrated how the puck spins and why once leaving the shooter's stick, it would have more velocity. And I thought, holy smokes, we're into something here. And he was extremely good at like Anthony. Anthony Stewart was in a different situation. He was staring into a camera and all the crew was looking at him, whereas Kevin had me, 5-6 feet away, which I think, even though he played to the camera, I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, he had a little bit of a partner,
a partner.
That's yeah. right. It did. And he was fantastic. He's full of mischief. He's full of wisdom, very thoughtful guy. I mean, he's done, you know, he's fought 60 times. It reminds me of some of the things that Grapes brings, is that he was a defenseman. So they are the ones that have to read the plays more than anybody. The goalie explains what went wrong, so they're good color commentators.
Yeah.
Forwards, they don't really care. They're just flying around, you know, trying to score goals. But the D, and especially the defense who fight, as you've seen even with the Battle of the Blades, we get a lot of, you know, of tough guys make yeah. great, you know, peacocks. They can puff their feathers out and perform. And that's what a fighter kind of has to do, or did mm-hmm. back in the day. And Kevin brings all of that to the equation. So it was a very rewarding playoffs to see yeah. his work and some of the others. Cassie Campbell Pascal, I can't say enough about her. You know, you got to see what she knows, the Hockey Canada coaching curriculum.
Yeah.
She's just very knowledgeable, and she's a former captain, two-time captain of an Olympic championship squad. And you could feel all that coming out in these panels.
Yeah, no, they were great. They were very entertaining. You know, Ron, tell me, I don't know, maybe it was different for you as a viewer. It was, I don't feel I ever really adjusted to the season being in the part of the year that it was, that the fact that I would be up at the cottage in the sunshine in August just did not help me get into hockey, obviously. And it was tough for a lot of other fans, I believe. What right. was it like for you? I mean, did you feel a bit disoriented, or was it like another season? Because right now is October. We should all be really excited about a new season, right? And it's going to take a while to shift back into the regular rotation for a sports fan, I think.
The only chance, Bill, was if the Canadian teams went deep. You right. had to have the Leafs playing. And then, you know, I mean, we build our world around made-for-television moments. The Nagano Olympics, I remember in 98, Canada was playing at 4 in the morning in Toronto.
Yeah.
And we were getting 5 million viewers because people would set their alarms and get up True. And watch Canada play.
Yeah.
You would interrupt your beautiful summer evening to watch Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner play for the Cup. But you're not going to yeah. do that. And we lost, I think, our last glamour team was Colorado. Nathan MacKinnon and the Avalanche had a lot of star power, and they had the Nazem Kadri former Leaf connection. So when we ended up with the final, nothing against Tampa.
Right.
You know, it just, we lost a little. Dallas was a bit of an unknown, and as you suggest, I'm not going to interrupt as a Canadian my last kick at summer for that. But having said that, it was a great series. The athletes did their part. We still got a million diehards most nights. And
yep.
I'm very proud of the players for the way they performed.
Do you think it was, a lot of people are saying, the hardest cup ever because of the insulation of the bubble?
Yeah, I think, you know, they on the bright side, I mean, these teams will be really interesting to see how well they've gelled going forward. I think the Dallas Stars, you know, that was a magical thing for them to achieve. And there were great stories throughout the course of the playoffs. The Philadelphia Flyers, Oscar Lindblom came back from cancer within it. Vancouver Canucks had a very good showing.
So,
it was a special run, and I do think it was the hardest Stanley Cup to win because you needed to combat, you know, missing family. You needed to combat, I'm sure, mental health concerns in order to make it happen.
Do you think, you know, we're seeing this, I think, in NBA, that the Miami team, which wasn't that big a deal in the regular seasons, they, you know, suddenly they became one of the best teams in the league in this limited, isolated bubble playoff. It seemed that happened a bit in hockey as well, and the reverse also. I thought the Leafs seemed to be finally on a bit of a roll before things got shut down. I mean, I know there seems to be problems with that team on defense in the back end anyway, but I thought that they would go further in the playoffs than they ended up doing, right?
Just picked the wrong team. You know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, Bill, have the best defense in the game. If they ever added some forwards, they'd be a legitimate shot at the Stanley. They have great goaltending.
Yeah.
So Toronto had pressure. So did Edmonton. And Edmonton bowed out in the preliminary round as well. You know, the two host cities, which was, you know, maybe an advantage. It's never an advantage. When you're playing for the Stanley Cup in Canada, you know, I can cite the 2004 Calgary Flames bowed out in the seventh game with the whole country behind them. 2006, Edmonton Oilers bowed out in the final seventh game with the whole country behind them. 2007, Ottawa bowed out earlier, but still in the final. And in 2011, Vancouver lost in the seventh game in the final round with the whole of the country behind them. It's hard, hard to play and win in Canada, believe it or not. So I think that was one of the things that hurt the Leafs, is that the circumstance was supposed to be skewed in their favor, and that made Columbus the perfect underdog.
Yeah. Ron, do you think, and, you know, is a Canadian team ever going to win the Stanley Cup again?
Well, yes, because of McDavid and because of Matthews. Ultimately, you know, whether it's Bobby Orr or Mario or Wayne, that's sort of the secret. You build around that talent, and I think it does make a difference. You know, I watched Brian Bickles on our Battle of the Blades, and he tied Game 6 of the 2013 Stanley Cup Final on a goal that was generated by Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. That 1-2 punch, you know, they in back-to-back drafts, they picked up Toews and Kane.
Yeah.
And honestly, Bill, they were down, they had their goalie out, and Patrick Kane, he undressed five players, five Boston Bruins, best defensive team in the game.
Yeah.
And then Toews made an all-world pass to Brian Bickle for the tying goal, and then Boland scores 2 seconds later, and they're up now, and the other team pulls their goalie. I've never seen that. The two teams, both teams pull their goalie in the final minute.
Wow. But not only did Chicago end up with two or three Stanley Cups. What did they win? Two, Ron?
Three
Stanley Cups. Every game you went to, you were going to see something really entertaining with Toews and
Kane.
Yeah, my goodness. You know, so that's what the Leafs have, I think, now.
They do. Yeah, they're not far away. As Brian Burke kind of did a little feature during the playoffs about which Canadian team's most likely to win, and he polled or canvassed five other GMs, and he, of course, was one. And they concluded over Edmonton, which surprised me a little. I thought McDavid would, you know, carry the day. But
yeah,
most people in hockey feel Toronto is right there. And Joe Thornton just left the San Jose Sharks after 16, whatever it is, seasons to join that, opportunity.
Yeah. Do you think the Leafs have addressed some of their needs?
I do. I think Zach Bogosian's a great get on defense. I believe Morgan Rielly's just going to grow and grow and grow into superstar status. So I'm glad that they're patient in knowing that they do have some value on their blue line. I think that Wayne Simmonds is a great get, and obviously Joe. I mean, these are guys that can move that puck around. When Toronto did rally once against Columbus, it was their all world unit of Matthews and Marner and Morgan Rielly. So they're right on the cusp.
That was the best 3 minutes of hockey.
Yes. Yeah. You were interested then, but that's,
oh, I know.
We needed them to sustain.
Me and 2.5 million others watched that one. I mean, that was pretty keen. The Canadians, I think, my goodness, they look like they've did some good moves, right?
Absolutely. And Ottawa, you know. So those two are maybe a little ways away, but it was the only surprise was them adding Jake Allen to support Carey Price. I guess that's, great. So they've got two great goaltenders in Montreal, and they re-upped with Brendan Gallagher. By the way, I mentioned Columbus. If they ever got forwards, Max Domi left the Habs and went to Columbus.
Saw that, yeah.
So, yeah, keep an eye on the Jackets. They'll start to come up. But, yes, Montreal's definitely got a good second line now. Nick Suzuki, he'll play with Tyler Toffoli and Josh Anderson from the Blue Jackets. Suzuki's the two brothers, Ryan and Nick, are just gems. And Montreal's got that as their second line center.
Pretty good. Do you still skate, Ron?
Yeah, but I'm shut down because of the COVID. Sadly, Blades asked that I stop, and I did. But I play Tuesday nights, and I will play Tuesdays and Wednesdays once we get through the Battle of the Blades. But to respect our crew and how crazy it is, I don't want to put myself at risk. But I miss it. I played three Tuesday nights here in the fall, and it was great to see everyone.
You joked earlier about being a beer league, or I can't remember the phrase, but do you feel for those guys right now, right? I mean, I play with it's a league of teachers in Peel, and I've played with them for about 20 odd years now, and it's just so much fun. But I'm at an age really where It's not COVID that's stopping me. I just need to stop.
But, you know, I find the greatest value for me, Bill, like even last year, we were sitting around early in the season, and I don't know how Dave Hodge's name came up, and somebody said, well, you should have Dave Hodge on Hockey Night in Canada. And it was their idea, right? So many of the things that I think about in my work, and I'm sure it's the same for you, you know, you do a lot of interviewing the people in the industry, but sometimes those voices in the dressing room are really great at coming up with, if not pearls, at least ideas that shape the way you think about things. So I really, you know, we after hockey now, we can't sit in the dressing room, but for the 3 weeks that I played, we sat outside in the parking lot outside the arena, and gosh, it's fireside chat, and it's amazing what wisdom comes from that conversation.
There's a group I played with for a while, a few 10 or 12 years ago in Georgetown, called the Halos, and these are guys in their 70s and 60s, and there was one or two at 80 still playing. Patrick Harry was one of them. He would stand by the side of the goal, and it would be like a table hockey game. You just turn the switch, he would tap it in. But the talk, you're right, in the dressing room, it was profound. And other times I played with a bunch of guys who worked at the Fan, and I used to write down what some of the dialogue later. It was so damn funny. So that's a big part of it for me now, given that I can hardly skate, shoot, or pass.
We used to have a bartender, Derek, at the Coach and Four in Oakville when I play Wednesday nights over on that side of town. Now we've switched over to a bar called the Fire Hall. But when we'd go to the Coach and Four, he was he might as well have been Samuel Johnson. He was a literary expert. Wow. And we would sit and talk books. So he introduced me to Miriam Taves, an author, and a lot of the nights the conversation gravitated to literature, which is crazy, right? How you don't expect that but that's how a hockey team works. It's just a really crazy cross section of walks of life and ideas, and it's a beautiful thing.
You mentioned Dave Hodge. I'd be remiss not to ask about another former colleague, Don Cherry, our buddy. Have you talked to him lately? What's going on with Grapes?
Just a handwritten letter, sadly. You know, Grapes, as he said, you know, he did what he had to do and I did what I had to do, and it was not easy. You know the whole drill. But he's got his podcast. His son Tim and Don are doing a podcast, and I'm sure he misses it a lot. I miss him, of course, doing the show. But yeah, it was just I feel like Dr. Fauci in a lot of ways. You know, it was one of those situations where we met up with an ethical dilemma, and the rights of an individual versus the greater good came home to roost yet again. That's, I think, I don't know how you feel, but as you get on in life, you start to realize the battle between individualism and collectivism is the most fascinating battle of them all. And I found myself in the middle of that one again. And it comes with the territory, and it wasn't and never will be easy.
Well, we were talking a bit about Don Grapes Cherry there. And that's an issue that we would need another hour podcast for. So we'll keep on going, Ron. Couple of last questions here. You've been very generous with your time. I'd like to talk to everybody about TV favorites, just in general. It's a TV conversation. So, you grew up, obviously, Red Deer, Alberta, and probably grew up watching CBC and one or two other stations, perhaps when you were real young, you know, very, very young. Do you have memories of favorite TV shows from back in your early days, and what would they be?
Well, for sure, sports was number one, but I would say a close second was the comedy shows of the day, Get Smart and Hogan's Heroes and the Beverly Hillbillies. And even I would make it a point to get home at lunch hour. I lived close to the school I attended, so I'd get home to watch the Flintstones and really admired that show.
Yeah.
But I got a kick out of Gilligan's Island. The whole theme of the stars of the show, whether it was Maxwell Smart or Gilligan, they were always the fall guy. They were the one that was made fun of, and they had a starring role in these, you know, crazy comedies. So I really enjoyed that.
They were basically Laurel and Hardy, weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always said it was a little bit of what Don and I became.
Yeah.
So there was no question that that was a little bit of the background of the way television was. It was wink, wink, you know, we're all in on the joke, but let's be clear, it's a joke. And times have obviously morphed. So, I watched, not to get off subject, but I watched Dave Chappelle's after George Floyd was killed.
Yeah.
And I just watched that in fascination at how brilliant it was, but how it could never be me. Like, I could never use that language.
No.
So it was a fascinating. You know, we were such a closed off little world of TV back then. That thankfully has changed. But yeah, I remember those shows, and I watched a lot of the detective shows too, Canon and the FBI out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Barnaby Jones was a real favorite. And I loved the theme songs of the TV shows. I was a real junkie when I was young for TV.
Well, Don, that's awesome. Me too. And speaking of theme song, that's my next question. Do you have favorite theme songs? In particular, you mentioned Barnaby Jones. Rockford Files was one I always loved.
Yes, yes. Can't argue with the Rockford Files as being. MASH is obviously iconic, yeah. The theme for MASH. It's funny, Schitt's Creek, my wife Carrie was a real devotee. So during the spring when I was doing this In Conversation online series, Carrie was binge-watching Schitt's Creek. And I would hear that boom, 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 boom. So that's been kind of ringing around in my head for the better part of the last 5 months. But I think the closing for 6 Feet Under, the music that was chosen, yeah, and the way that was executed is one of my favorite pieces of music and television. I love Mad Men, so I love the music of and the opening. Like I liked the Sopranos opening. Yeah. So those are a few of my favorites.
Those are great references. The that final episode of 6 Feet Under, one of the best series finales ever, where everything's advanced to when they die. Right, it was pretty cool. What are you binging now?
I'm not. I'm sort of back on the sports junket. So tonight the World Series is beginning in my world. I don't know when the podcast is airing, but I just finished watching the 7th game of the Dodgers' successful advance. I'm watching a little bit of NFL, a little bit of baseball, but really, truthfully, I'm deep in my Blades research. So as I told you, I'm watching Keisha Shante morning, noon, and night, and listening to her music and enjoying it. And that's kind of, unfortunately, what I have found, Bill, is that, you know, the reason I lost track of pop culture is I read for work extensively. And if I'm not reading for work, I'm reading ethics. I have a whole section of books behind me. There is on Indigenous rights. Over there would be Black Lives Matter. Over there would be labor relations, and over there would be ethics.
Just for listeners, Ron is surrounded by books. I'm able to, we're talking face to face over the Zoom link, and I can peer behind him, and my goodness, there's a wall of covers there. So that's impressive. Pretty cool. Good for you. What are you reading right now? What's your latest read?
Well, because of the show Battle of the, although I just finished a couple of great, I read Sammy Joe Small, the goaltender, because Jennifer Bottrell, dear friend of hers, is on Battle of the Blades. I read Sammy Joe's biography. I also read Duff Gibson is a skeleton gold medalist from Torino. I read his biography in the last 2 weeks. This is Soulmates on Ice. It's the story of Megan DeHamel and Eric Radford. I'm reading that book as we speak. I'm also reading, I always cross-reference Just Kids by Patti Smith. Do you remember a rocker named Patti Smith?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So her story of her relationship, and, you know, it's just an unbelievable book. She loved Arthur Rimbaud, great writer from France. I've read a lot of the because of the social injustice issues. I've read Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. I read Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me, unbelievable. The Color of Law. I just finished that book. I've read The Skin You're In, two different versions of The Skin You're In, one by Desmond Cole of Toronto, and another by an author in the United States. Read probably 15 books specific to that topic in the last 2-3 months.
Wow, good for you.
That's why I've lost my TV. I was a child so addicted to television, only child as you were, so I lived with the television. That was my those were my siblings were the people on TV.
Yeah, me too. My brother was an only child. No, that's my joke. But I grew up watching, you know, Captain Kangaroo and of course the Friendly Giant, and those were my siblings in a big way as well. Well, Ron, it's been a pleasure catching up with you, and it's such a juncture of so many things that you're working on. Your own book, Cornered, is it on the shelf? Where do we find that? That was
I only have the original, the first edition. Kirsty McClellan Day, the co-writer, gave me that. I don't have any copies, unfortunately, because I should. They're good for auction items and such.
Yeah.
But yeah, when things slow down, I would love, I always wanted to do, I mean, Kirsty said, that can be your next book, Ron. But the book I wanted to write was a ripoff of Cervantes' Don Quixote. So that's where Cherry was Don Quixote and I'm Sancho Panza. And it was going to be a little bit of the wisdom. Shakespeare used the same template. He used it with Hamlet and Falstaff. And I want to write a book if I can ever figure out a way.
Damn, that would be a great book, Ron. Yeah. My God, what an idea! I think that'd be fantastic. There's a mini series in that.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. Now, in all these books and everything, do you have a large book of puns? I mean, honestly, some of the ones you came up with this season in particular were just jaw droppers, astounding. But you must draw from somewhere on some of these.
No, Mom was a punster, so I got that DNA from her, and I like to, you know, sort of assuage the guilt I feel for the pain I cause with these, knowing Shakespeare was into them. He loved a turn of phrase, and if it's good enough for Shakespeare, then I don't feel as sick as I evidently am. But that's a fun to play with word. Like I wanted Bill all through the Stanley Cup to call it not the most coveted trophy in sports, but the most coveted. But I just couldn't bring myself to.
Wow.
I couldn't bring myself to go down and make, you know, light of a very serious pandemic.
Thank you for saving it for this.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you sharing it now. I've got my lead for the story. Yeah. So that's fantastic. Well, Ron, best of luck through the rest of Blades. Stay safe and healthy, and I hope that it's a spectacular finish. Just remind folks, it's returning on Thursday, October the 22nd, correct?
And runs for 6 consecutive Thursdays.
And this is on CBC, of course. So, Ron McLean, thank you so much for your time today. And it's always great talking to you, Ron. Good to see you again, and have a lot of fun heading into the rest of the season.
Same, Bill. Thank you.
Take care. Whatever you do. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening again. Another fun conversation. We've got a few more lined up. We've got some fun stuff. Phil Hong, our producer, thank you again for all your great work every single time pulling me through this thing. And we do have some great guests. So thanks again for listening. And listen, if you liked what you heard, please like us. File a review. Sit down and type up, boy, that was great. Just anything. It helps other people find the show. I've been told, anyway, that's how it works in the Podverse, and we're always happy to get any feedback at brio.tv. So thank you very much for listening. I want to thank our sponsors, and we'll see you next time.